Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, January 21st, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I open up the show wondering aloud about the apparent disconnect many Connecticut voters have between local and national politics. State Republican Party Chair Ben Proto joined us to chat about the current state of the 2026 governor's race and the Republican candidates. CBS News White House reporter Aaron Navarro dropped by to talk about the latest administration position on Greenland, while Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar discussed a recent top 10 list he put together about President Trump.
So over the last maybe two or three or four days, I've been noticing on my social media feeds, mainly on Facebook. I do get some stuff on Instagram. I do see some TikTok stuff. I do see some, you know, other stuff there. But mainly for the purposes of this program and what we do here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6, I get and see and watch for the reaction mostly on Facebook here. And I've noticed kind of unsolicitedly, is that a word, unsolicited? I've noticed more postings coming up regarding the upcoming governor's race here in Connecticut. And of course, on the Democratic side, you've got Governor Ned Lamont going for what many people say is a surprising third term. We've got one challenger, Josh Elliott, the state rep from Hamden. And on the Republican side, so far, officially, we have Aaron Stewart, we have Ryan Fazio, and we have Betsy McCoy. And there's rumor that a former state legislator, Harry Arora, may drop into the race, too. I was told the other day by our buddy, our pal, John Wharton from Southern Connecticut State University, there could be even more. So the more the merrier. Come on in. And I've noticed, though, in my social media feed, maybe because it's what they say the algorithms do, or this, that, and the other, because, you know, that's how a lot of these social media sites work. They see what you're interested in, physically what you type in, and if you put certain words like Trump or Lamont or Stewart or Democrat or Republican, right, the algorithm goes, how can I direct stuff to that man, to that woman, to keep them clicking and keep them reading, upping their screen time, and then I'll send them display ads. And that'll make my advertisers happy. The consumer gets what he or she wants. We get what we want. We make money. Okay. So, obviously, I've been searching for a lot of stuff regarding the election, but I'm starting to see a trend. And it's not all that much, all that surprising, but I'm starting to see it. And I told you folks, remember saying a few months ago, I said, wait till we turn the year from 2025 to 2026. Wait till that happens. And wait until, what did I say? I said about mid to late January, early February, maybe into March, where we are, where people will start kind of paying attention to this. And I've noticed a lot of anti-Aaron Stewart stuff on social media, particularly on Facebook. Now, again, it's, you know, all over the place, but a lot of people, millions of people still use the Meta products, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And not only is it coming from, you know, the people I've cited before, these small independent groups, you know, groups of people who get together and, you know, so-and-so patriots and patriots for New Haven and Fairfield County Republicans, but the state Democratic Party is doing it much the way the state Republican Party is doing it, more organized stuff from the parties is what you would expect. So still no great shakes here. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I have started to see a trend here. And it is exactly as I predicted. And you remember when both Aaron Stewart and Ryan Fazio got in the campaign, and Aaron Stewart was in much earlier. She, I guess, in an effort to win over the cadre of the state Republican Party voter in Connecticut, which they are out there. Listen, there are a couple of 100,000 registered Republicans in the state, probably a few more thousand
who maybe not registered but tend to vote Republican, many of whom, despite what the blue state here in Connecticut says, they like what Donald Trump is doing when it comes to things like immigration and the economy or whatever. But I've noticed now over the past few days that the state Democratic Party, and I follow them on Facebook, so I get their feeds, they are showing a lot of photos, and the one I guess that's in her campaign kickoff photo of Aaron Stewart and Donald Trump. Now, again, no big surprise here. We all know this is going to happen. We all know that from now until Election Day this coming November, God willing, we're all still here. No meteor is going to hit us. Our health is good enough. But we know because we have seen what's going to happen here. And rather than actually campaign on what they've accomplished, the state Democrat, which is very little of anything as far as actually lowering costs and making your lives easier in Connecticut, they will maybe do the smart thing, as you would think, if you're anti-Republican or anti-GOP, and try to connect Aaron Stewart with Donald Trump. Nothing weird about that still. But here's the question I'm wondering here. Are the state Democrats more worried about Aaron Stewart than Ryan Fazio? And the secondary question I'm asking here, as we get up and underway at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Will any current policies from the Trump White House affect who you end up voting for in the governor's race? See, I don't blame the state Democratic Party for doing what they're doing. If they think Trump is a wedge issue, and he likely is in a blue state of Connecticut, that's fine. Attach the candidate or the candidate maybe you fear the most or the candidate that comes out there and says, well, yeah, I'm not running away from Donald Trump. I mean, that's a batting practice fastball. But the question is, do you automatically, maybe I should ask the question that way, would you automatically vote against a Republican candidate here in Connecticut because of Donald Trump? Now, you may say, well, geez, of course I would vote. Well, why of course? In other words, if you look at, say, Ryan Fazio or Betsy McCoy or Harry Arora, if he gets in, or Aaron Stewart, and they answer a question at a seminar or a voter forum, or you read some of the policies they'd like to implement, are you the type of voter that says, well, that's not a bad idea, but I'm not voting for him or her because of Trump? Are you that close-minded? Again, I ask, current White House policies by the Trump administration, are they affecting who you end up voting for in the 2026 gubernatorial race? So, would you vote to continue a policy that you're not thrilled with versus something that you say to yourself, yes, I heard Aaron Stewart, or I heard Ryan Fazio, or I heard Harry Arora, or I heard Betsy McCoy mention this the other day, and it kind of makes sense. And you say, gee, I wonder, and then is there the devil on the other shoulder? You remember the famous scene in Animal House there, the angel and the devil? I'm not going to say what the devil said, but if you saw the movie, you know what I mean. Are you responding to the angel or the devil there, or the devil or the angel? You see what I'm saying here? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And I've told you, I have friends of mine that very smart people, high-income people, who have, now I think this is pretty dumb, but that's just me. I have friends of mine who said, well, yeah, well, I like this or that policy from that Republican, but I would never vote for him and her in a local race because of a national Republican Party or Trump. Now, I'm not saying you can't do that. And I'm sure there are Republicans who do that about Democrats. But is that really smart? I mean, like I've been saying, the people in the General Assembly, the 36 men and women in the state Senate, the 151 men and women in the state House, The constitutional officers of Connecticut, the Attorney General, the State Treasurer, the State Comptroller, the all the other state, the Secretary of the State, they all on a daily basis probably affect you and your life and the lives of your relatives and kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, sons, daughters, whatever, a lot more than anything that happens in the White House, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Bill Clinton or whatever. Now, again, there is tax policy. I get that. I understand that. But we start with this today, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Will any current policies from the Trump White House affect who you end up voting for in the 2026 Connecticut gubernatorial race? Are you the kind of voter that even if you heard Aaron Stewart or Ryan Fazio or Betsy McCoy, they're inofficially, Harry Aurora is not, but even if you said, geez, that makes a lot of sense, I would like that. But then is there that other part of your the political being in you that pops up and says, no, don't ever do that. Don't vote for that. Well, why not? Well, because they like Trump. You see what I'm saying here? And I understand there's different levels of intensity to this from other people. I just don't get it. All right, great to have you with us at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So I'm seeing on some of the social media pages here, some attacks against Ryan Fazio, but many more against Aaron Stewart. Now, we know why. The Democrats, the state Democrats, no matter what they say, no matter what you hear from Bob Duff or Martin Looney or Matt Ritter or Governor Lamont or Jason Rojas, look, they know they've done practically nothing legislatively to help you and I. They just haven't. And I will continue to pose this question for about the next 10 months until you people go to the polls. And you may say, well, why are you saying this? Well, because they never talk about what they've done. I'm looking at the Connecticut Democratic Party Facebook page here. Fighting for our values by holding Republicans accountable. Wait a minute. Republicans in this state, God love them, and we'll have the party chairman coming on later on today, Ben Proto, but I mean, holding Republicans accountable? This is the party that won't even let 98% of Republican bills get a hearing in Hartford. Bob Duff and Martin Looney and Matt Ritter and Jason Rojas, that's what they do. Holding Republicans accountable and working to elect Democrats. And how is that helping Connecticut? Electing Democrat after Democrat after Democrat after Democrat. I mean, as we come into an election year, is that not a fair question? What has the Connecticut Democratic Party done except get in the way of growth, except given 35% pay raises to state employees, and tie the hands of our police and say that they won't even let Connecticut police work with ICE to get rid of violent illegals. And yet, this is what they do. I'm looking at this today. This was posted at 1:30 yesterday. Now, this is a fair attack. I'm not saying they can't do this, but all I'm saying is when you watch parties on the left and right do this, and they're constantly attacking their opponents, which is what, you know, a lot of campaigning is about. What about touting some of the stuff you've done to make Connecticut more affordable, to make Connecticut electric bills lower, to take away the public benefits charge, to lower business tax? Oh, that's right. You haven't done that. This is from the Connecticut Democratic Party. If, like Aaron Stewart, you want to be the same type of leader as Trump, if, like Ryan Fazio, you voted for Trump 3 times and admire him, if you covet Trump's endorsement for governor, like Betsy McCoy, stand up for Trump's values, and say, this is what you want to see in Connecticut. And what they did is they put a picture there of, again, we talked about this story, ICE screwed up here. And they, took this older gentleman, this, I think, Laotian or Cambodian gentleman in Minnesota, and they were looking for somebody two blocks away. So on one hand, I don't blame the Connecticut Democratic Party for doing this. But on the other hand, it just shows that they have no accomplishments. And don't tell me they do, because I haven't heard of any. You tell me here. Now, again, are state Republicans all that? And you know, and a bucket of gold? No, not necessarily. But I read this stuff and I laugh. That there are no major accomplishments that help middle-class Connecticut residents ever touted by the Democratic Party. They make nothing cheaper. They lower no taxes. They never make it easier on our police. They screw businesses every time they can. Now they want to outlaw facial recognition technology. Now they want to, according to a couple of columns I've read, they want to put in law how many self-checkout spots that stores can have up and running. I mean, it's ludicrous. But it must work, I guess. Maybe Donald Trump is the best thing, the greatest thing to ever happen to the Connecticut Democratic Party. Because this way they can talk about Trump and not talk about the fiasco that is the state pier, the Terrence Chang fiasco, the Doug McCrory scandal that we have now, the Deirdre Gifford scandal that we have now, the pure mess that we still have tied up in court with Marissa, the dog ate my text messages, Gillette. But again, if you're the state Democratic Party, God forbid you talk about that. Oh, no, you got to talk about Trump. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. But maybe you're a willing participant here. Maybe you take this hook, line, and sinker. Maybe you're a type of person. Will any current policies from the White House affect who you end up voting for in the 2026 governor's race? Why should you care what the White House does when you may have a candidate here in Connecticut that makes our state better? Is it that difficult to understand? We like to have this guy on every so often as he hops around the country and the world there representing Republicans in Connecticut. I've known him for years. Ben Proto, the Connecticut State Republican Party chairman. We'll talk about the current race and all that. Ben, good afternoon, sir. How are you? Where might you be these days?
At the moment, I am in the lovely town of Santa Barbara, California.
Wow, it's rough. You got a rough kid, huh? Yeah, man.
Well, if you knew what my flight was like yesterday, Paul, you know just how rough it was.
Not good, huh?
No. 14 hours on planes and airports and an hour and a half drive because they couldn't get us to the airport they needed to get us to. It was a long day yesterday, but we got here.
All right, good. And you're out there, and we're looking at a foot of snow here on Sunday, so you've been warned. Ben, we have now the two main, I would say main or major or marquee candidates in the Republican gubernatorial race, Ryan Fazio and Aaron Stewart. Now, before we get to anybody else, Ben, they both met the threshold for public financing. So explain to my listeners what that means money-wise for each of them.
So they both met the then existing rules for public finance. Those rules changed in January. Mm-hmm. So people who get into this race now will have to raise more money than they did, but they will also have higher limits that they can get from contributors to get to that number. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that under the new rules, both of them will be entitled to a grant for the convention period of about 800, I think it's 804, 807,000. It just changed with CPI. And then there's coming out of the convention, assuming they both qualify for primary status, either by being the endorsed candidate or by getting 15% or more mm-hmm. on any ballot, would be entitled to a primary grant of, I believe it's just under $4 million. And the general election grant, I think, is roughly about $18.5 million.
So, Ben, you know, if we take away the fact that, you know, we've had a lot of self-funded candidates, the governor on the Democratic side, Tom Foley, Bob Stefanowski, I would think, Ben, moving forward, that $18 million, which is going to go up every cycle, do you think that's enough looking forward to run an effective campaign? What do you think?
I think so. In Connecticut, I think that's, you know, puts you in a good position. You know, the advent of super PACs has long been established now in politics, including here in Connecticut. So that's additional monies that will be put into the race. You know, I suspect the governor will, you know, Governor Lamont will probably put, you know, in the past, he's done about $20 million into each of his races. Mm-hmm. He has the ability, obviously, to do much more than that. So it's going to be interesting to see how he funds his race this year, given the new numbers for a, you know, a CEP candidate. But I think, you know, you start looking at, you know, spending $800,000 on a convention, you know, $3.5 to $4 million in a primary, and another almost $18 million or so in a general election. If you can't figure out how to get your message out and how to turn out voters and how to turn on voters, then you probably shouldn't be the candidate.
Yeah. And one thing here, Ben, one thing, what is your opinion here on something the governor said the other day, which is kind of interesting? I don't know if you found it as interesting as I did. You have the governor actively going out. Now, he didn't really get that many individual contributions the last time out. But him saying, hey, we're looking to get more people involved here. We'll take small contributions, even though I have the money. Is he trying to position himself a little bit differently here? You think he was told to do that? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think, you know, Governor Lamont is tacking to the left more and more every day to try to placate the progressive side of the Democratic Party in Connecticut. This is why they have a candidate in Josh Elliott, you know, doing what he's doing. You know, and Josh has indicated that, you know, if he can't raise the money by the convention, he probably won't go forward. But I think the folks on the far left are pushing him that way. I think they are trying to establish a much stronger foothold for the 2030 election. Assuming, you know, they're, I think, looking at it that Governor Lamont, you know, will get reelected. That's their belief. I'm not quite sure I concur with that belief, mm-hmm. but if they do, then the 2030 race will be an open race. And I think they're looking to push the Democratic Party further to the left. And so I think what Governor Lamont is trying to do is to try to get more people engaged with his campaign, show that he has much broader support than just a rich guy who wrote a check mm-hmm. one day. And survived COVID in the 22 election to, I think, try to figure out how to tack to the left to placate them on some policy stuff, but to also keep the folks who are not members of the far left progressive crazy club from really dominating the Democratic Party in Connecticut.
Ben Proto is the guest, the chairman of the Connecticut State Republican Party. And Ben, obviously for the GOP, you've got to, in your role, be kind of a neutral observer here and a referee. But other than Aaron Stewart and other than Ryan Fazio, two other names out there, I guess Betsy McCoy is officially in this thing, or is she? And now we're hearing rumblings of a former state legislator, Harry Arora. What can you tell us about that?
So my understanding is Betsy has filed her paperwork to run for governor as a full candidate, not an exploratory. Harry has filed an exploratory committee for governor. So Betsy is in the race. Harry is looking at, do I want to get in the race, or is there something else I might want to do? And look, you know, we've got, you know, right now with Aaron and Ryan, who've been in the race, obviously, for a much longer period of time. I think two very talented, young, up and coming, you know, political and governmental forces. You have Betsy, who, you know, has been the former lieutenant governor of New York, you know, Betsy single-handedly, in my opinion, was the person who got hospitals to actually start using Clorox wipes during the time when we were seeing high infection rates in hospitals and operating rates. A simple, you know, thing, but it made a world of difference. She's got a, you know, she's a very smart, very articulate woman. She's, you know, she is the Energizer Bunny on a lot of issues, on a lot of things that she does in her life. And Harry, look, Harry is, you know, a self-made, successful business person who was a state rep, ran a tremendous state Senate campaign. I'm sorry, state treasurer campaign. Is a very good, you know, campaigner, very good candidate, and a very good elected official. So I think we got four people, you know, looking to possibly be our nominee, who any one of which I think would be better than the current administration, would be more transparent. You know, when we look at the Lamont administration and the amount of corruption that is now coming forward more and more every day, you know, I think people are getting tired of it. We haven't quite hit Tim Walz's level of corruption yet in Connecticut, but you know, they're trying to get there as hard as they can. So I think, you know, we've got, you know, three solid candidates who would be tremendous governors, and one looking at it who, should he decide to do this, will be, you know, I think will be a force within the process.
I notice, and you may have seen it, obviously, Ben, and Ben Proto was the guest, the state Republican chair. I notice that, at least on their Facebook page and some of the other social media pages, the state Democratic Party, it's no surprise that they are going after Erin more than Ryan regarding the pictures she has in the Oval Office with President Trump and her support for President Trump. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think they feel, Ben Proto, that that's the low-hanging fruit here? And what dangers do you think, if any, that poses for the Democrats?
So, look, you know, the Democrats, you know, sole issue this year is going to be Donald Trump has caused every single problem the world has ever known, and most notably in Connecticut. And the reason for that is because if they talk about their own record, they understand that they, in fact, are the people who caused the problems. You know, and I said this time and time again before, Paul, and you've probably heard me say it. And I asked it, you know, I was on Channel 12 this past weekend with Jim Tickey, who's the vice chair of the party, who, you know, kept going back to Trump. I asked very simple questions. What is it that Donald Trump had to do with the implementation of the public benefit chart? Mm. What did Donald Trump have to do with the implementation of among the highest property taxes in the country? What did Donald Trump have to do with among the highest auto, homeowners, and business risk insurance rates that are approved by the insurance commissioner in the state of Connecticut, who's appointed by Ned Lamont? What did Donald Trump have to do with Ned Lamont and the Democrats imposing a $900 million tax on hospitals? So every time you cut your hand that morning opening the tuna can and have to go get stitches at the emergency room, you pay a tax on that. Donald Trump has nothing to do with that. They have nothing else to talk about, because if they talk about their record, they understand their record is really bad. They are the reason that Connecticut is so unaffordable. They are the reason that our out migration in 2025 was higher than it was than our in migration in 2024. And Paul, I go back to this simple example. Let's take a student at UConn who's graduating this year, 23 years old, graduating from UConn. I don't care if they get the degree, gets a job in Connecticut at $60,000 a year. Not a bad starting salary for a 23-year-old, except they can't pay their bills on $60,000 and live in the state of Connecticut.
No.
Period. End of discussion. They can't do it. And you know, the Democrats' answer is, well, we need to build more affordable housing. Well, affordable housing in Fairfield County for a one-bedroom apartment is over $2,000 a month.
There you go.
That's not really affordable. You know, we still have the highest energy rates. We still have the highest tax rates. We still have, you know, some of the highest grocery costs in the country, some of the highest health care costs. You know, Ned Lamont and the Democrats want to keep talking about health insurance and health insurance premiums. What they don't talk about is the cost of health care, which actually is what drives health insurance premiums. They've done nothing to bring down health care costs in the state of Connecticut. And as a result, we've seen higher and higher health care or health insurance premiums. They've done nothing to address the homeless population, which has grown by 20% in the last 2 years. The answer to that was to remove the center bar and park benches so they have someplace to sleep at night. That's not an answer to the homeless problem. They haven't discussed why over 10% of our population is on SNAP or WIC. Ned Lamont's response to that was, well, we need to give them more money so they can pay the higher cost, not bringing costs down. That's what Ned Lamont and the Democrats have done in Connecticut. They have made it unaffordable to be here. They've made it unaffordable for our young people to be here. They've made it unaffordable for our lower middle class people to be here. And what are they doing? They're leaving the state of Connecticut, you know. And so as a result, they have nothing else to run on. So they're going to try to tie this to Donald Trump. And quite frankly, I think the voters are smarter than that. I think I've said time and time again, and Paul, you know this because you talk to them all the time. Voters are a lot smarter than politicians are.
Yeah.
They see through unauthentic people. And the Democrats are becoming more and more unauthentic on a daily basis.
All right. And on that note, Ben, travel safely. Ben Proto, the chair of the Republican Party of the state of Connecticut. Ben, thank you. Be good, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on again. Talk
appreciate
to you soon,
it. Yep, talk to you soon. All right. Got to tell you, never a dull day, I would expect, in covering the Trump White House or the president, wherever he is, for the White House press corps, traveling and otherwise. Joining us right now is one of our buddies, CBS News White House reporter Aaron Navarro. Aaron, good afternoon, my friend. How are you today? Everything good?
Well, Paul, good to be with you. Everything is good. It's been quite a day.
I guess we're not gonna take Greenland by force here. Now, the president gave kind of a nebulous, what we're hearing, framework. Negotiations will move forward. Aaron, do we have any idea what that means or not?
We don't, in part because the president kind of acknowledged to reporters that this is a framework of a deal, in his words, that is quote pretty far along, but there still seems to be a couple of details that are being worked out. We don't know what those details are, but the president did say once those are worked out is when we could start to learn more details on what this framework of a deal is. And that's the same response we got from the White House. They said, President Trump has said these details will be unveiled as discussions continue. And the White House had nothing more to add at this time.
You know, Aaron, the end game here, at least to me, and please correct me if you've heard anything differently. Part of this just has to be what, a larger American military presence? We already have a presence there, but Mr. Trump has spoken about this Golden Dome missile system. So do we need a bigger footprint in Greenland for that? Is anybody getting specific about that or not?
The president isn't necessarily getting specific about it, but has pointed to, and we've heard this from the White House, where Greenland is on the map. Just the fact that it is closer to the Arctic region could potentially be the first line of defense for any attacks coming from Russia, which is one of the two global superpowers that President Trump has pointed to justify the U.S. owning, acquiring Greenland in some capacity. That being said, I also want to note that the president did rule out using military force to acquire the country, which did get a positive response from the Danish foreign minister and other European leaders. But the president also said he just doesn't believe that Denmark nor NATO has the military capability to protect Greenland in the event of Russia or China taking it over, which is one of the threats that President Trump has mentioned in the past.
Interesting. Aaron Navarro, CBS News in D.C. Aaron, thank you for the time. Have a good weekend, my friend. We appreciate it. Thank you.
You too, Paul.
Thanks. All right, thanks. So there you go. All right, this segment here every Wednesday at about 5:15 or so Eastern Standard Time. Remember when we used to say that? Dan Haar joins us, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. And Dan, you are now officially a polarizing guest. Did you know that, Dan Haar? Did you know that?
I think we're on Atlantic Daylight Time right now.
All right.
Who am I polarizing?
Well, we had a guest earlier today that called up, and he's this true story, Dan. And he goes, "What time is Dan Haar on?" I said 5:15. He said, "Okay." He goes, "You know, I like what he does. I that piece he wrote." About Donald Trump's 10 most horrific actions. He said he liked that. Now, Dan, at the same time, and this is why a talk radio consultant would love you, I get a text message. We have a little text system here. He said, are you going to ask Dan Haar about his outrageous piece in the New Haven Register? How biased? Any forthcoming list of Trump's 10 best actions? So there you go, Dan. You're like a good baseball umpire. You're upsetting half of the listeners 50% of the time. So my hat's off.
We own the Waterbury Republican American.
Yes.
And the Waterbury Republican American still has its traditional,
yes,
you know, long-standing editorial page.
It's
independent because we are respecting the independence of the editorial page of, those guys, I thought, might have written a top 10 best things Trump did, and maybe we could have put them together, but it didn't happen. And, you know, I do my thing, and
that's
I am not unbiased. My job is not to be unbiased, it's to be fair.
No, no. So talk about that piece, Dan. What made you do that? Did somebody say, hey, Dan, how about a top 10? Or did this come out of like an old Casey Kasem show you heard or something like that? Why'd you do this?
Well, I wanted to do something to mark the 100 days that we did that back in April.
Yeah.
The 365 days. And I thought that the best way to do it, because the way the mind of a person who doesn't love the Trump presidency thinks is these are the things that he's done, right? You know, in other words, that's how my mind works, right? So I could have come up with some kind of construct. I noticed that yesterday there were a number of, or was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. The days are long. there were a number of stories with constructs, like, you know, Trump and cruelty, or Trump and power, or Trump as the big one, of course, is that nobody expected Trump's, you know, nation building, his international forays.
Yeah.
We all expected him to do what he did domestically, mm-hmm. even up to and including the immigration roundups and the National Guard. As shocking as that is, it's not out of character with what Trump's law and order platform was as a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Going after Greenland, Venezuela, abandoning Ukraine, these are not things that you would have expected him to do based on the campaign. So there was a lot written about that. So did I want to do a theme and say, you know, this is, well, I did that in the first week of the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
I did a sort of a thematic look at what Trump is about.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of naturally followed. Why don't I look at the things he's done?
Yeah. Before we get to another interesting scenario in the General Assembly with Doug McCrory, and I know you wanted to talk about that, and I was just reading up on that. In light of the Trump stuff, Dan, and the stuff you write and read and I read all over the place, I also read, there was a piece in Axios, I don't know whether you saw it, where they asked, they took like 15 or 20 of people who may want to succeed Donald Trump, Dan, in 2028, and they asked him the question, hey, what about transgender athletes? Because that was a big, you know, that ad clocked in very well for Mr. Trump. And only Rahm Emanuel gave a definitive answer on that. And the other 10 or 15 people, including our own Chris Murphy, refused to answer that. Does Donald Trump exist and still pull about 50% or 45% favorability from the U.S. because of the inability, Dan Hart, of the other side to come together and say, hey, this is our message, take it or leave it? Are they in danger again, maybe not so much in the midterms, but in 2028, of just being out of touch here or not? What are your thoughts on that?
I think the Democrats stand for something, and they know what they stand for. But right now, it would be stupid for Democrats to abrogate what they also stand for, which is fight Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, there's nothing wrong with fighting Donald Trump as a thing that you're doing, right? Because Donald Trump represents a threat to democracy and freedom, and so therefore, people who are opposed to him should think that we're going to fight him. The Democrats stand for the belief that government can make people's lives better. That doesn't mean that the belief in huge government spending, because deficit, the debt increase has been larger under Donald Trump proportionally as a share of national debt in his first term. That was 50%. That's larger than Biden's increase, which was also the largest aggregate increase. So both presidents, Biden and Trump, ran up the deficit to an alarming degree. In contrast to Democrats in the past and Republicans in the past. So I don't think you can say that because Democrats believe in the power of government to do good as a congealing philosophy, that means they believe in government spending. And I think that the Democrats do stand for that and will stand for that.
Bit closer to home, we have a very powerful Democrat who's been in Hartford for a lot of years, Doug McCrory, and even people I know who don't follow politics that much have said, yeah, I recognize his name. He seems to be, Dan Hart, in a little hot water. What's going on with Doug McCrory?
Yeah, but first, I thought you were going to ask me what I thought my single worst example of what Trump has done was. And
well, go ahead. Go right ahead.
I I feel obligated to force that issue.
No,
and
go
I do
ahead.
Think that the pardon, the January 6th pardons, is number one worst thing he's done, because it undermines, it calls to a lie his whole idea that immigrants are here illegally and therefore are subject to forcible removal, and all the philosophies that he stands for. That's right up there. But I want to move on to Doug McCrory.
Sure.
And Doug McCrory, to your question, is, like all senators, has a lot to say about what grants go to his district,
mm-hmm.
and or her district, in his case, his district, and that's the north end of Hartford, Bloomfield, and Windsor. And in the north end of Hartford, there's an agency called the Blue Hills Civic Association, which acts de facto, not officially, like an anti-poverty agency. There are federally designated anti, but it acts like that. It does job training, soft skills, grants to stores, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of keeps the wheels going in a community that's, especially a community that's troubled economically. And so Blue Hills got $15 million, I believe closer to $16 million in grants in three fiscal years, ending in fiscal 25. So that's a lot of money. And they didn't spend all that money themselves. That money went to 8 or 10 sub-grantees. And one or more of those sub-grantees were directed, according to this audit report by an outside accounting firm that just did a three-month study for the Department of Economic and Community Development, who granted that money to the Blue Hill Civic Association. According to that audit report, A, there might be fraud because some of the contracted stuff wasn't done. B, Senator McCrory was directly involved in picking and choosing who got the money.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, because we already know that Senator McCrory was under federal inquiry, under a federal grand jury investigation into his relationship with Blue Hills Civic Association and his personal relationship with the head of one of those sub-grantees, people are connecting all kinds of dots.
Yeah.
Dots can't be connected yet all the way because Senator McCrory hasn't been charged with a crime. And yet, I wrote this afternoon that Governor Lamont is calling for Senator McCrory to be either removed of his high position as chair of the Education Committee, or be forcibly removed from that committee. And by the way, the chair of Education, because of ECS and education cost sharing, controls a lot of money.
Do you think either one of those things ends up happening?
I've been trying to reach. The governor was meeting with Senator Looney, the president pro tem of the Senate, at 3 o'clock today, and I've been trying to reach one, the other, or both of them without any success to figure out what happened. I said in the column I did think it was going to happen, but that doesn't. It is unusual because in the case of, for example, Dennis Bradley, Senator Bradley, or the case of Robin Comey, the state rep, any number of cases in the past that you and I can remember. No sitting House member or senator was removed from a committee, much less his or her seat itself, without being formally charged with a crime.
Interesting.
Or a crime or some type of wrongdoing. So Senator McCrory has not been charged, and we're not suggesting that – I'm not suggesting.
Sure.
Nor is anyone at Hearst suggesting that he's guilty of anything.
All right. We know you'll keep an eye on that for us. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Hart. Dan, have a happy weekend, and we will chat with you next week, sir. Thank you.
Day one.
All right. We'll try.